Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Thursday evening here in the DMV, and it was an interesting 24-hour period for the Commanders, and I'd say for me specifically as well. First off, Adam Peters spoke today along with assistant GM Lance Newmark, their pre-draft press conference. We did get a little clarity from Adam Peters on what's going to happen in the first round, but still not the clarity you maybe are hoping for. We'll get to that in a moment. In addition, the episode today for this podcast, it's time. It's the annual Standing Room Only mock draft with me and my guy Evan Silva from Establish the Run, but we added a third element this time, Danny Heifetz from The Ringer, who is part of their draft coverage. He joined us as well, so we had a three-man weave of picks to discuss here on the podcast. I think we each went through, you know, we each made picks, explained the picks, had some banter back and forth. I figured, normally I don't like doing trades for these things, but I kind of figured kind of had to at least discuss it with all the conversations about quarterbacks. So we did that. And it was a lot of fun. So I'm going to get to that all in a moment. But I do want to say today that we had, for the first time in a while, a live chat on The Athletic with myself, our guy Mike Smeltz, and subscribers discussing the Commanders a week out before the draft. I had a ton of people in there. It was a great time for me. People said some nice things, had some great questions, and some good comments. I really do appreciate it. You know, time flies, and I certainly didn't get to everybody who had some questions, but I really do appreciate it. You know, obviously, hopefully we've addressed a lot of those questions here on the podcast or on the website. But either way, you know, great fun. Hopefully, I'll look to do it again sooner than later. I basically didn't do it all this season, in part because with the podcast, I know it's not a back and forth, but it is, you know, a conversation about a lot of the topics I think people want to hear from. But again, really fun, great time, and I really appreciate everybody showing up for that. Also, of course, make sure you subscribe if you want to join in for the next time. Subscribe to The Athletic. Also, I had a story up today about what Adam Peters and Lance Newmark had to say. Plus, earlier this week, I had my mock draft six ways. So you can check that out as well. And for the podcast people, if you've been meaning to catch up and you haven't yet before the draft, this week alone, Greg Cosell from NFL Films, Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Last week we had on Adam Schefter. The week before that we had on Chris Sims. Tons of great guests. And there's other ones as well, other people as well who've been kindly coming on board to chat with me. So take a look at that if you haven't. If you've missed any episodes, and you know, you got a week to go, but there'll be more episodes to come. All right, now let's get to some of today's action before I get to the podcast. So, as I said, Adam Peters and Lance Newmark spoke this afternoon. First time we've heard from Peters since the owners' meeting. First time we've heard from Newmark this whole time. We had not heard from him yet, so it was interesting to see their dynamic. You know, because you know, they're friends. They had not worked together previously. And, you know, clearly they have a fondness for each other, that they get along well. So that was good. But more importantly, we got some details about what's going to happen in this draft. No, not who they're going to pick. But we do know now when they're going to pick. And you might say, well, what do you mean? They have the second pick. Isn't that obvious? Sure. And even I haven't been talking about trade downs in some time. But nonetheless, we know that, you know, there are teams out there like the Vikings and the Raiders who seemingly have interest in trading up. The Vikings this week met with Jaden Daniels, which is a sign to say, hey, we're still trying to see if we can work things out. But the Commanders at least said for their end, hey, we're not trading. So that much is notable, which really means ultimately they do like one of these quarterbacks. Again, we can sit here and say, well, of course they should. Well, you don't know, right? I mean, if they're in the camp, like some of these other evaluators that say, you know, I just really don't like the way Drake May's mechanics, his decision-making. And then there are, the people who say, hey, Jayden Daniels, too thin, injury prone, whatever it might be, don't, he's not the guy. Okay, figure likely they're gonna like one of them, and sure enough, it appears that they do. So they'll be picking second. Beyond that, not a ton from Adam Peters. We did, well, actually, I did actually ask him about this week's top 30 visits with these four quarterbacks and why kind of do them all at the same time. I know there's been some brouhaha on Twitter, and Jayden Daniels' agents put up an emoji and people are freaking out. My basic view is the agent to me is kind of irrelevant here. The team, it's the draft. Unless the player flat out says, I don't want to go there, like Eli Manning or John Elway, then it doesn't really matter. So I don't put much stock into that. So that said, why bring them together? Independent of anybody's, think it's a bad idea, why do it? And Peters did it, said basically the reasons I've mentioned before. It's just a different way to see these people interact. And, the way I would look at it is, think about it. If you go into a job interview, you're going to behave a certain way, especially if you're a young person, 21, 22, 23, going to meet with a bunch of, adults. I mean, is that, are you going to behave a certain way versus if you're with your peers? And granted, it is still a job interview, obviously, and the adults are still there. But at the same time, you're playing some Topgolf. You are, again, with people your own age. You're probably friends with some of these people. I mean, certainly the quarterbacks have been around each other enough over time, right? So they've got some relationships. And what does that mean? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. But maybe and what Lance Newmark was saying about it was that, because it was the first time for him as well. Peters had done versions of this in San Francisco and New England. This is the first time he'd done this here. And Newmark said that, he liked seeing the group dynamics. Who's really charismatic? Who's a little more reserved? How does that carry over to the next day? And so on. So, seems reasonable to me. Secondly, the question that was coming up over the last 24 hours was, wait, if you're bringing them all four of them at the time, aren't you sort of limiting your opportunities to speak with them, to go over film, whatever it is you choose to do? I think that's completely reasonable to ask. I mean, it is different than if you say they're bringing in 15 people and it's offensive linemen, cornerbacks, tight ends, and running backs or something. The quarterback is a different deal. That said, tell me the system that is proven to be infallible or even works the majority of the time. As we know, the quarterback process is incredibly fragile, unproven. It doesn't always work. We see busts over and over again, or just, a misunderstanding of who the person is, what have you. So I don't know what's better. So I get the concern, but look, they've also met with these quarterbacks at their pro days, at the combine. I don't know exactly, is there things they could do? Could they spend an hour in the film room with Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and Tevita Pritchard, right? Or and the quarterback and go through all this? Sure. And maybe they did some of that. I don't know. What Peters was not exactly telling us, but I'm not going to crap on it because it seems odd or different. Odd and different does not necessarily mean wrong. And I've been saying this all day. For me, in general, I try to not be too judgy with things I've heard, but until I see it in play when you're dealing with new coaches or in this case, new GM. A couple of examples I use. One, I have long ago, when it comes to college basketball recruiting, said, don't tell me about some four star that's going to be the savior. I need to see this person because the amount of four stars and even some five stars that I've seen be completely overhyped is preposterous. And you can some guys you can just tell in 10 minutes that this isn't the answer, and that happens over and over again. So similar to people telling me, hey, this is great. Let me not think for myself. And similarly, when Scott Brooks got hired by the Wizards, He'd come from Oklahoma City. The Thunder had made the NBA final. There were people that were criticizing him, a lot of things about his rotation and some other sort of basic coaching things. But I was like, all right, well, let me see. And within about 2 months, in asking him some questions about sort of like what choices that he made, and there was one specifically about why bring in Jan Mahimi when you already have Marcin Gortat, forget about the money part. And he said he didn't realize that Gortat was as good as he was, and that to me was a big red flag because Gortat was always pretty good. My point is to say, I heard what people said. In that case, they proved to be right, but I wanted to see it for myself. Whereas the college players, they tell me something, I want to wait for myself, and it's not right on any level. So that's how I am here. Let's see what happens with Peters. It works in San Francisco to a degree, but is it good with quarterbacks? I've no idea yet. Neither do you, neither does anybody. So criticize away if you want. Beyond that, questions we asked them included, are you planning on trading down or trading up in the draft? Not from two, but like elsewhere on the board. And, needless to say, they didn't give a straight answer. Lance Newmark went with situation, saying basically, it depends what you're telling me here. Do we want to have, is there a certain player that we want? Is it a range? What do we have to give up? If we wait, what happens? So he was talking about that. Again, seems reasonable. There was very little that they said that to me seemed weird or anything. Like, nothing seemed off or odd or suggested they're going to, get a position that, that for the rest of us would seem a little bit odd. So not much there. He was asked Peter specifically about the tackles, and he acknowledged that yes, this is an the offensive tackles. That yes, this is a good to excellent prospect class, or so it appears. And that doesn't mean that they're going to move up. I'm kind of pushing back on that idea myself. Moving up for second first, that is. I'm kind of pushing back on that myself, but I'll formulate a final answer on that one next week. So, those were the highlights. There was also, some interesting just personal stuff. Peters opens up the press conference by thanking people. But I don't just mean thanking Lance Newmark and Martin Mayhew or Dan Quinn and the coaches. I mean, he's thanking like every scout by name. He's thanking the PR staff by name. He's thanking the kitchen staff, the chef in the kitchen staff by name. He's thanking his mother-in-law, because the mother-in-law helped move his wife, his two young children, a dog and a cat, across the country to, while he's been stuck here. He said that they've been unpacking everything and he hasn't opened up a box yet. He felt bad about that. So it was just some interesting personal dynamics. He and Lance Newmark, again, they're friends, but this is the first time they're working together. But you can tell they've got a good bonds and connection as well. So, having that doesn't necessarily mean you know what you're doing, but obviously Peters' reputation is pretty good, and Newmark was with the Lions for nearly 3 decades, so guys who certainly have been around the block. So that was kind of the basics. There really wasn't a ton else in specifics. Again, they remain close to the vest, but at least they confirmed they will be picking number two in this draft. Beyond that, so for next week, obviously the draft is on Thursday, the 25th. I expect to have more podcasts leading into the draft, and I will have a final mock draft, both a first round and a Commanders only mock draft. The Commanders only on The Athletic, the first round mock, I will post that on social media or discuss it here as well. All right, so let's get to it here. Mock draft, standard room only, 2024. Evan Silva from Establish the Run, Danny Heifetz from The Ringer. Good times. There was one trade. I forced one in there. One trade and a lot of intrigue. This was not sort of a carbon copy of drafts that we have, that I think you'd see sort of standard. Some interesting choices here, I think for sure. Led to some interesting discussion. So here we go. Myself, Evan Silva, Danny Heifetz, mock draft on the Standard Group Only podcast.
All right, now some fun's going to happen. Forget all these evaluators and all these things. We're going to talk about the mock draft because we're going to do a damn mock draft right now. It's something I've done every year Well, at least since I've been doing this podcast with one of my guests here from Establish the Run, the great Evan Silva. Evan, welcome back. Are you you ready for this?
I'm absolutely ready. I'm about to publish my second mock draft. I know there are some people out there with like 5 to 7 mock drafts. I try to only do 3. So I'm gonna publish my final one on Friday, and then or, I'm sorry, my second one on Friday, and then my final one obviously the night before the draft. But this is a great practice that we've done every year for the past, I don't know, half decade, and I'm excited to do it, and excited to do it with Danny Heifetz too from The Ringer.
That is the other special part of this. Instead of it just being a two-man job, we added a third party, not a third wheel, a third person. Danny Heifetz from The Ringer, my chauffeur when we go to the Senior Bowl. Danny, how are we doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, man. I'm honored. We got two legends here. We got, I mean, you guys, I appreciate it. I'll be your third wheel. That's fine. I appreciate you guys having me. And I agree with you, Evan. I got th three mocks. I got my final one coming next week too. So, thank you guys for letting me crash.
A story I did this week, I did the Commanders only mock 6 different ways. Is that too much? Does that go against the efficiency model that you're discussing?
I'm sure that the Commanders fans, what's left of them, are very appreciative.
How dare you? Everybody's coming back. Everybody's happy now. The new
Okay,
owner
good.
getting a quarterback. Everybody's happy. If they don't trade to draft the quarterback, by the way, I'm gonna move out of town.
In my mentions, they haven't seemed very happy over the last 5 or 6 days, but
Well, no one who tweets is happy.
no, it's definitely, if I could figure out a way to tweet and never see anything, I wish I could do that.
The there is it is always like I started watching Welcome to Wrexham, that show about they have the soccer team, and they were talking about how the supporters there are like, you know, the people who are just kind of sad all the time. They have like the happy clappers who are like, oh yeah, even when something goes wrong, and then the hooligans. And the hooligans are the fans who are on Twitter.
Yes, that seems very much accurate. All right, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go. I'll take the first pick. Evan the second, Danny the third, and just keep going in that order. And normally we don't do trades, but I think in this year we have to at least address it because of there's so with the quarterback situation, there could be a lot of them in play. We won't get into every scenario, but I've marked down a couple. So when it's that time, but I think we need to discuss it. I'll bring it up to whoever is picking, and we'll go from there. I'm not being a rude host by making the first pick. I'm being considerate because we kind of know where this is going, so I don't want to put this on either one of these guys. The Chicago Bears with the first pick in the 2024 NFL draft, Caleb Williams, quarterback USC. This has been essentially a foregone conclusion, it's felt like, at least since the combine. Once there haven't been any noise out of the Caleb Williams side about not wanting to go or anything along those lines. Evan, let me ask you just this though. You're Mr. Fantasy. With the team that they have, how excited are you for Caleb Williams from the fantasy perspective? Because rookie quarterbacks can be, a bit risky, but with the weapons they have and his hype, what do you think of that?
Yeah, they have weapons. I mean, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen. I think they could add another receiver at number, or maybe even Brock Bowers at number 9. We'll get to that when we get to that. I think they have an underrated offensive line that was made to look worse due to the slow processing speed of Justin Fields, made the O-line look worse. I think their offensive line, and they return all 5 starters. From that, except for the Cody Whitehair, they got rid of, who wasn't good, but they added Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton on the interior, and I think that actually Caleb Williams is going to be dropped into a very positive situation. It makes all the sense in the world. Super, super talented kid. I think a really good kid, has kind of gotten a bad rap in some circles, but I think he's a really good dude, and an absolute baller on the football field. I think it's been locked in ever since they traded Justin Fields.
All right, well, you're going to get to watch him on the local Chicago feed there. So good for you on that. All right, we're up to number two. Obviously, this is the team I cover. I've talked about this ad nauseum. I wanted one of you guys to do it. So, Evan, I'll turn to you. Number two, the Washington Commanders. You know the deal. They're positioned to take a quarterback, but what do you see and who do you see them taking?
Yeah, so you know, I feel like you're passing the buck here, Ben Standig, you know, onto me, making sure that you don't have to make your announcement on who you like to be picked by Washington at number 2. It doesn't really matter who you actually, you know, like to be picked there, but who do you think is going to go there? I think there's a consensus forming at this point via you via Peter Schrager, via even Daniel Jeremiah, who did a conference call today and kind of conceded that when he talks to people in the league, they think it's going to be Jaden Daniels at number two. And I get it. I mean, Dan Quinn, you know, being the new head coach there, what quarterbacks are the hardest to defend in the NFL? True dual threats. Jaden Daniels led the NCAA in both yards per pass attempt and yards per rushing attempt in his final season there, won the Heisman Trophy. He goes number two to Washington.
And that's where I've been for the last month or so. I will just say, for those of you who are listening, because you came in because you wanted to hear Danny and Evan, just like I said during the coaching search, there's not a lot of noise coming out of the building. It's all being assumed. So it's very possible that Adam Peters is like, you know what? I'd like Drake May or J.J. McCarthy or whatever. But as best I can read the tea leaves, and you mentioned some of the other, some national reporters, it seems like that is where everybody is headed. So that's makes sense to me, what I would have done as well. So you get my endorsement on that. All right. Number three, the New England Patriots. And the Commanders and Patriots are very interesting, similar situations. But Danny, the Vikings didn't call the Commanders to possibly trade. They're calling the Patriots, though. They want to see, can they move up to get a quarterback right here? They've been mentioned with Drake May a lot. So here's the deal, Danny. They're telling me they're going to offer the Patriots and you both of their first-round picks this year, number 11 and 23, their 2025 first-round pick, and they'll throw in a third or fourth, whatever you think we need to do to get this deal done. Where are you on that, or do you say, hey, got to take the quarterback?
Oh, third or fourth, that's nice. Justin Jefferson, I noticed you haven't signed him to an extension yet. Is he on the table?
We're going to leave that conversation for never. Oh, no.
Well, that's really nice of them to call. I appreciate the check-in. The Patriots are going to take Drake May and run home to the bank. I mean, honestly, it's honestly, I think, a pretty enviable position for New England, where they just get to sit there and just have Drake May fall to them. It's just absolutely stunning to get to do that. I know Drake May is like weirdly divisive. I think that there's like, I don't know if it's smoke or not, but it feels like a really wide gap between how Drake May is perceived in media outside observation versus, I know a lot of people have different thoughts on his footwork, his accuracy, and all this stuff. But I, at the end of the day, I feel like if you compare 21-year-old Drake May to the 21-year-old other versions of some of these guys, I think the Patriots have to pull Drake, especially after seeing how CJ Stroud transformed the Texans. They had more talent, but the Patriots have been ran roughshod on by Josh Allen too much to pass on a guy like Drake May.
I hear it. In terms of you're saying the split between the outside evaluators and people in the league, I just wrote a story the other day where I talked to 17 different sources and I talked to people throughout this process, and you're 100% right. The outside people all typically, well, not all, most of them seem to be putting Drake May second. Some people do in the league, but the variance on Drake May is far wider than it seems to be on Daniels, and that's why I think him at two makes sense. But totally, very good pick for the Patriots. They start the post-Belichick era with a top-level quarterback prospect. All right, number four, the Cardinals. The Vikings are right on the phone again, making the same offer. This one's more interesting, though, right? Because the Cardinals don't need a quarterback in Kyler Murray. If I was writing this story, I could see a world where I say, you know what, their GM last year did the deal where he trades back, then trades back up. I could see that the video of him doing that was pretty fun to watch the other day. I don't want to play that game here. And I think that at some point you also have to get talent. So on the assumption that they would only trade once here with the Vikings, I'm going to just say they stay at four and take Marvin Harrison Jr. At some point you have to get playmakers. Like I said, I can see a world where they trade down to 11, then back up to five or something. Just too complicated for what this is. So I'm going to go with Harrison. And I think I understand there's arguments for the other two receivers, Odunze or Neighbors as well, but I'm going to take that as somewhat people just being bored with Harrison being the number one guy, and I'm going to stay with it. So Marvin Harrison four to the Cardinals, which brings up Evan and the Chargers. And again, Evan, the Vikings are persistent. They're still calling. I think they're dropping the third round pick for you because now you're down to five. The gap is only six picks, but they're still wanting to do something here. They want to get up. J.J. McCarthy's still there. Where are you at with the Chargers?
And I think that's a distinct possibility that the Vikings try to come up here at number five. I'm not really, you know, super exhilarated about projecting trades because it's very difficult. I also think that this idea that the Chargers could take an offensive lineman at number five makes some sense, But actually, their offensive line, in terms of like talent on paper, is actually pretty good. Trey Pipkins is an okay right tackle. Rashawn Slater is a really good left tackle. The only offensive lineman that maybe would be worthy of the number five overall pick would be like Joe Alt, who is a 6'8" finesse left tackle. He's not going to play right tackle in the league. And Olu Fashanu, who's another, you know, I mean, super talented guy, but he's like a pure left tackle. And they have a stud left tackle already. So I think, you know, despite the fact that they're going to reduce the pass volume under Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, I think they need to take a wideout, because you look at their wideout depth chart right now, it's pathetic. Quentin Johnston was terrible as a rookie. Terrible. Josh Palmer is a decent number three. Ideally, you're number four. And then Darius Davis, I mean, he didn't even play as a rookie, as a fourth-round rookie. And then they have Semi Fehoko. They have four wide receivers on their current roster. They're taking a wide receiver at five, guys. I mean, unless they trade down, which that's actually what they should do, but I'm not going to project trades here. They need to take a wide out here. And I think that they would be more likely to take Rome Odunze than Malik Nabers, because Rome Odunze kind of fits the mentality of Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman more. So I think this would be the first surprise of the draft. Rome Odunze, number five to the Chargers.
You're pairing Rome and Roman together. I like it.
Yeah. When in Rome.
I like Odunze. I went to a one Washington home game this year, the college team I'm in. And it was a game where he had three catches. Two of them went for touchdowns at like 100 and something yards. I love the physicality. He's got the speed. And you mentioned the sort of the vibe that matches with what Jim Harbaugh wants. I totally get it. All right. Well, the Vikings have put their phone down, because I don't know if they think the Giants are going to budge, but Danny, you are the Giants, not only picking for the Giants, you are a Giants guy. So JJ McCarthy's still on the board. If you want to go the quarterback route, Malik Nabers is there. Where are you thinking with the Giants at six?
So I want to lay out how I view this, but I actually want to solicit a little thoughts here, because I'm biased as a Giants fan. I think the Giants really want a receiver. I think they want Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze. I think a lot of the smokescreen stuff around draft time is actually overrated. I think that there's a lot more like the Cardinals. The Cardinals don't exist. There are 200 people who work for the Cardinals and they disagree really passionately. And so I think a lot of stuff we think are smokescreens are actually disagreements. I think the Giants actually do smokescreens. Like, I think the Giants are one of the few. I think it's weird that we've heard about McCarthy. And I almost wonder if the Giants actually have been trying to entice the Vikings to trade up, pass them for McCarthy, so that Malik Nabers will be a Giant. I think that the Giants want Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers and are trying to ensure they get one of the ones they prefer. So is that crazy? Because I'm leaning toward taking Nabers here. However, do you guys think I'm a biased Giants fan to not be taking JJ McCarthy?
Take Malik Nabers.
Okay. I feel that way. I think Brian Daboll could not hide his grin. And I think Malik Nabers came out, even at when I was at the combine, Malik Nabers had to keep, he was like, yeah, when they told me that, I mean, if I were on the Giants, like, he kept slipping up, and I'm like, I think Nabers is the guy here.
I get Daniel Jones is not for everybody, but like, I don't, if you draft McCarthy and he doesn't play, just because that's what the plan is, how does that help the Giants this year? If they don't have a better year, then aren't they all possibly gone?
I just don't think McCarthy, frankly, is a big enough upgrade over Daniel Jones for them to pull Trigg. And at the same time, Nabers is a perfect – he slots in exactly what the Giants need, because you have Nabers to be your true number one. You have Wandale Robinson kind of stretching the field horizontally. You have Jalen Pilot on the outside stretching vertically, and just Darius Slayton being like a fourth receiver. Everything makes more sense that way. And Daniel Bellinger can be a tight end if Darren Waller retires. Like, I think the offense makes way more sense that way.
Okay. I makes sense to me. So McCarthy is still on the board. We've hit the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you could make an argument, I guess, that they should consider quarterback. I mean, they do have Will Levis, who they took last year. I think Will Levis probably showed enough for them to say, let's roll the dice again. He was like basically the top of the second round. He was a guy that a lot of people thought would go in the first. And this is another team. They're rebuilding their offensive line. Joe Alt is sitting there. Evan already kind of mentioned him. They took Skoronski last year to get more help here. I just think this is, maybe it's almost too obvious because it feels like everybody's going to put this in their mock draft, but I will as well. And just say Joe Alt, seventh pick to the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, another piece for that offense. They've really tried to make some moves helping that group this year. Evan, possibly another obvious pick here with the Falcons. But what do you say here with the Falcons at eight?
Yeah, the hyper chalk here is Alabama edge Dallas Turner had 10 sacks this past season in the SEC, can bend the edge. You know, he's a bender, young prospect, and, you know, a prospect on which the arrow was pointing up. The Falcons haven't had a legitimately good edge rusher in maybe a decade. I mean, right now their starting defensive ends are Zach Harrison and Arnold Ebikite.
Sure.
Who I don't even know who that is. So I think that it's Dallas Turner. I think that there could be some consideration for Byron Murphy, who Daniel Jeremiah in his conference call today mentioned as a sleeper to be a top 10 pick. That's plus 650 on DraftKings if you're into betting. I did put a little, you know, put a little dime on there. But I think Dallas Turner as the chalk here is actually smart chalk. I'm going with him, number eight, Dallas Turner to the Falcons.
And I think the thing I also like here is Atlanta, they're in a win now situation. The owner tried to hire Belichick, got talked out of it. They signed Kirk Cousins to all that money. They are trying to win now for the 80-something-year-old owner, and they need a player that can come in now, and Turner is one of those kinds of guys out of position of need. So, yeah, I think that makes just almost too much sense at this point. We get to number nine, and I don't know, Danny, if this is the board you thought. There's no the top three receivers are gone. You know, if we were talking trade, I kind of feel like the Bears should maybe look to trade down. They only have four picks, and if just use one on Caleb Williams. If you want to throw out a hypothetical, cool. But otherwise, who do you think, who do you like here for the Bears at nine?
I want to cede my time to the speaker. Evan's the Bears fan. I'll take the Jets if Evan wants the Bears.
I am not a Bears fan, and I actually kind of don't like the Bears.
I feel like an idiot. You're not a Bears fan.
No. I mean, if they were to start making like smart moves, like move out of the city, move out to Arlington Heights, build a dome, you know.
I want
to
throw out you're wearing a Cubs hat.
High fits. I could go. That's not, they're not the same team, not the same franchise. Okay. The Bears are more along the lines of like the White Sox.
Okay.
So, but I do think that the arrow is starting to point up, but it's okay. It's okay. I forgive you.
All right. Well, then I'll take the Bears then. I'll do it. Wow. All right. Well, you learn something new every day. I think that this is an interesting board where the Bears don't have a receiver. It's been thrown out that the Bears, if this situation, Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers are all gone, it's been thrown out that they might take Brock Bowers at tight end. Do they have Cole Kmet at tight end? I don't know if Cole Kmet is good enough, frankly, to not take Brock Bowers. So on one hand, maybe it's the smart move to, you know, just take the ball player, man, right? On one hand, Brock Bowers is a ball player. He's probably the best guy on the board. I think the Bears did a really good job this offseason getting like Keenan Allen receivers, so they don't have to go take a pass catcher. Maybe they would take Brock Bowers. I am going to go the other way. I'm going to go offensive line right here, and maybe this is a mistake. You know, they have they obviously have Darnell Wright, who they took right tackle last year. They have Braxton Jones, who's actually pretty solid at left tackle at them, and it's not like a must. And also, I'm going to go Olufoshano to Penn State. And ironically, he went to high school with Caleb Williams at Gonzaga. I live in Washington, D.C. It's like a mile from me. This is kind of like maybe a hot take, but I just think that in the whole point you take a receiver is to help Caleb Williams. I love Brock Bowers, but if we're being honest, I almost think Brock Bowers trying to fit him in with Cole Kmet might screw up the offense as much as it might help early. And I think just investing in protecting Caleb Williams, giving him two incredible top 10 tackles in back-to-back years to protect him is like, it's hard to go against that. So I'll take Fashanu to the Bears.
I agree with you based on this board. Like I said, I think trading down would be what I would think they would probably want to do, especially if you're taking offensive line, you can get somebody later. But yeah, for our purposes, Fashanu, Caleb Williams, the Gonzaga High School reunion, taking place in the Windy City. All right, so that leaves me to the Jets at 10. And here it feels like it's either the Brock Bowers pick or an offensive lineman. I said this on radio today to somebody that it's like, how much does GM Aaron Rodgers push to get another receiver, or does he prefer a blocker? They did add two tackles this offseason, two old dudes. You know, there's concerns with injury. Are they going to break down? And needless to say, you need Aaron Rodgers to be protected at all costs. but Brock Bowers is pretty, you know, pretty special. I will probably change my mind on this one a few times before the draft, but I'm just going to go with the offensive line. I just think, like, short term, long term, that's the better move. I mean, I get it that they could use a Brock Bowers, but, you know, they have, they've got Garrett Wilson. They signed Mike Williams. It's not like they're bereft of receivers at this point, Breece Hall. So I'm going to go with an offensive line and give me, the question is which one, I think, is more of my question. I'm sort of torn here, but give me Fuaga out of Oregon State. I think he can play some guard if they need him now, but in the long term, he can be one of their tackles, and he's, you know, a pretty good backup plan if, in fact, one of the tackles gets hurt. So Fuaga, for me, at number 10 to the Jets, which puts Evan on the board. I imagine I know what you're going to do here, but you let us know.
Yeah, I think it becomes easy at this point. And this is what I had happening in my first mock draft, is J.J. McCarthy slipping a little bit to number 11, because it seems like he is considered almost a lock top five pick at this point. But then, you know, you hear like tape grinders and, you know, the people that are concerned with sample size, and his sample size is very low and his tape is not that great. He crushed at the combine because he's so good on the whiteboard and because he interviewed so well. That's when his stock really kind of elevated, was at the combine. But I feel like his stock has kind of gone back down as people started to go back and watch him, and he's just not quite that impressive. But I do think he's impressive enough to insert here as for the Vikings. Sam Darnold maybe starts the first four or five games, and then they pass the buck to J.J. McCarthy, who's a redshirt sophomore. You know, again, he had under 800 pass attempts in his college career, but he was a winner. Again, really good intangibles, and I think he's worth it here at number 11.
Hard to argue if we're all going to discuss at least the possibility of him, of them trading into the top five for him. So if he's at 11, makes a ton of sense. Danny, you're back on the clock at 12. Certainly Denver is annoyed that McCarthy went one pick before them in this scenario, because they are the most quarterback needy team, I think, in the league. There's some guys on the board, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, but better ranked players on the list as well. So where do you have the Denver going at 12?
So obviously the Broncos need a quarterback. I don't think the Broncos go Bo Nix or Michael Penix. I certainly don't think they go Penix at this spot. Denver needs everything, right? I mean, you got Russell Wilson trade and the Sean Payton trade combined cost three first rounders and three second rounders. So like the Broncos just need players, man. Like the Broncos don't have a lot of players they have drafted who have contributed to the football team recently. And so this is a team that could use a quarterback. They left tackle Garrett Bowles is on the last year of his deal. They don't really have many defenders after Patrick Surtain who have contributed. Like, this is just barren of talent. So a popular pick here has been cornerback. I actually am going to throw, I think, so Riley Moss, who is a white cornerback, a lot of people think he's a safety, and I think that's why there's been more of a percent. And I've said this at points, too, that the Broncos need a cornerback behind Surtain. I think Riley Moss is going to play cornerback. So I don't think the Broncos to go. I think the Broncos go Brock Bowers here. And at the risk of pretending I know what Sean Payton thinks about anything, I think Sean Payton is going to see Brock Bowers and his head's going to start spinning about everything you can do and really run that offense around him. I know Sean Payton might often, you know, the Saints were built around Marcus Colston with the seventh round pick. But at the same time, they also went Reggie Bush at two. So I'm going to take Brock Bowers to Denver.
If he can't some good years with Jimmy Graham as well.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if Payton can't get a quarterback here, getting a weapon for that offense, I'm sure, is something he is desperate to do. So, yeah, Brock Bowers there, you know, it's just a pure talent play. Like you said, they need a lot. Makes a lot of sense. All right, we're at the Raiders at 13. I want to ask this to you guys. The idea of them taking a quarterback, you know, they have Gardner Minshew now, who's, you know, the stopgap guy, as we saw last year. He's okay. They have Aiden O'Connell. We'll see where he goes. I don't know if I've been buying into the quarterback idea for them at 13 at all, but like, how desperate do you, either one of you think that they actually are for a quarterback, or is this just more talk that they seem to want one?
Desperate.
I think depends who you ask. I think Antonio Pierce probably wants Michael Penix. I think that the front office probably doesn't want to use a first rounder on a quarterback if none of the top four guys are there.
One of the arguments I would make in favor of Michael Penix here would be, that, you know, Mark Davis's dad, Al Davis, believed in throwing the football down the football field. And Michael Penix is like maybe the best vertical, straight vertical passer in this draft. And so the coaching staff and, you know, the executives could sell Michael Penix to Mark Davis, and owners get involved with quarterback decisions. That's the face of the franchise. And so I actually think that Michael Penix makes a lot of sense to the Raiders, because you could sell Mark Davis on that for sure.
So they're part of the reason why I asked that was because, damn right, Michael Penix is going to the Raiders here. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to know what level of a blowback I was going to get from my guests here. When I did my survey and I asked about the top six quarterbacks, now Penix came in fifth behind the sort of the obvious four, but there were some who said, hey, I think he's at no less than the third best guy available. And this week, the Commanders brought in simultaneously Drake May, Daniels, McCarthy for their 30 visits, but they also brought in Penix, which was odd to me in that, like, I don't see Penix as in play for two, but you like him enough to want to consider him. I mean, maybe they trade down. We'll see. No Bo Nix. I guess he's just still waiting for the Evite. I think there's enough buzz out there that says people, you know, if you're desperate for quarterback, that Penix is viewed as pretty good. And, you know, we always look at these things from like a decade perspective. You just got to get going somehow. So don't worry in sort of what he is in 10 years with those knees. Just focus on where is he at now. And I think he does give them some potential upgrades. So Michael Penix, 13 to the Raiders. I don't know if that's a surprise, but sort of the first.
Well, if there's one team that you're going to be like, oh, that's a surprise. If it's the Raiders, then we're probably doing something right.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> Absolutely. All right. So, Evan, you're back up. Saints at 14. You know, kind of a meh team, but where they could probably go in a few different directions here. Receiver, tackle, some defense. Where are you at here with the Saints?
So I'm tight with a guy who covers the Saints, probably the best beat writer for the Saints. And he told me best offensive tackle left available. And so that brings us to Troy Fatanu from Washington and JC Latham from Alabama. And I've heard that the Saints believe that Fatanu is a guard. So we're going to go with JC Latham here out of Alabama, a massive dude. They have some history of drafting massive dudes. Andrews Pete, Ryan Ramchick's knee, he might be done. So we're going JC Latham here at number 14 to the Saints.
I like it. And I assume by best beat reporter, you mean my guy, Matt Paris, who went down there a couple months ago. No, I assume you mean Nick Underhill, but I'm going to go with, I'm going to say Matt Paris.
I'm not revealing the sources.
Well, that's okay. All right. I'll say Matt Paris, give my guy a shout out. Okay, Danny, you're back on the clock. Number 15, the Indianapolis Colts. The AFC South had a few teams make some moves this year. The Colts were relatively quiet, but, you know, always a solid team. And then Anthony Richardson coming back healthy. What are you thinking here for the Colts?
I think if this is the board for Indianapolis, I think they go Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback out of Toledo. He has the size for Chris Ballard, the GM in Indy. He's just got a type, man. Some guys just got a type. Chris Ballard likes, you know, these big physical dudes. It's not a coincidence Anthony Richardson is the quarterback for the Colts. And I think you look at Quinyon Mitchell, and that secondary had some issues last year with explosive plays. They had Juju Brents, the cornerback last year. They just re-signed Kenny Moore in the slot, but this is just a defense that I think this is just a defense that really still needs some help. And if you look at the offense, the Colts have actually invested quite a bit into their offense. The only team with a real running back contract extension for Jonathan Taylor. They have Anthony Richardson. They just re-signed Michael Pittman. They have Alec Pierce. If Brock Bowers isn't there at tight end, everything else in Indy has an answer. But I think unless Dallas Turner fell, I think cornerbacks, this is like a perfect marriage of what's on the board and what the Colts need. So I'm going to go with Mitchell.
I like it. All right, Seattle 16, I'm up. One of the sort of chalk picks has been Fatanu, the offensive lineman from Washington, in part because his offensive coordinator is now got the same job with the Seahawks, and that would be an easy move to make. However, man, I just keep seeing all the defensive tackles just getting paid crazy money, and that is arguably Seattle's biggest need. You mentioned Byron Murphy is out there, feels like he's like the clear guy at that spot. And I'm not discounting the need for guard, but, you know, typically you can find those at some later round. I think they take a difference maker here at a position that's getting paid a ton of money. So Byron Murphy to Seattle at number 16 puts Jacksonville on the clock at 17. Evan, what do you got?
Yeah, I've actually heard independently that Byron Murphy is not getting past the Seahawks at 16. I actually think he might go earlier, but obviously we're dealing in just a certain scenario. He's available at 16. Seahawks, I think, pull that trigger. So I'm up 17. Jaguars, they could go a lot of different directions. I think they never wanted to lose Calvin Ridley in free agency. It's just the Titans had a ton of cap space. I mean, they overspent on several guys, I think including Calvin Ridley, and snatched him away from their division rival. The Jaguars cannot go into the season with Trevor Lawrence, with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk. And I mean, this is not, an explosive receiving core, right? Evan Ingram. They need to go get Brian Thomas out of LSU. I actually think this is Brian Thomas's floor. I don't think he gets past 17. I think he'd go 15 to the Colts. But I don't think he gets past 17 to Jacksonville. Led the NCAA in touchdown catches this past season. Had an incredible combine. They need a guy who can get down the football field. That's Brian Thomas.
Makes perfect sense. I don't like investing a ton in receiver, but they lost one. They need to get one back. And, like you said, Trevor Lawrence, got to get him some more help for sure. All right. Bengals at 18. Danny, I thought they could be a place for Byron Murphy if he was there, but, it sounds like crap. The receiver's thing. What's his name? T. Higgins.
Is probably going to play on the franchise tag.
Right. Sounds like he thinks he is, at least. So I don't know if that changes your thoughts, but what are you thinking here for the Bengals at 18?
So it's a good point about T. Higgins. So the Bengals, I think the Bengals draft not to necessarily have rookies contribute in year one, but really to year two. Like if you look, they draft Dax Hill really to replace Jesse Bates, who they knew they was going to leave in free agency. Last year, they drafted Charlie Jones, not to play, but to replace Tyler Boyd this season. So I think that if they replace T. Higgins, I don't think they're going to – I think they keep T. Higgins for 2024. T. Higgins' replacement would probably be drafted this year to replace him next year. I do think Brian Thomas, if he made it to Cincinnati, might be considered. But I think that a later-round pick to do receiver, I think right now, right tackle for Cincy is huge. They have Orlando Brown, who very badly wants to play left tackle. You look at right tackle, I think the question is Troy Fautano out of Washington, who I love a lot. I feel like – and then it's kind of extremes. Fautano is like a player. He doesn't necessarily quite have the size. And then you have Amarius Mims, who out of Georgia, who I have been sending to Cincinnati a lot. But he has played 8 games. But I think I'm going to have to give him Fautano. If Fautano's made it this far, I think that's he just seems like a Bengals. Duke Tobin, the guy who runs the Bengals front office, just seems like a Fautano guy. So I think that just being able to slot him in, and then you have Trent Brown at right tackle, I think that would – protecting Joe Burrow is paramount.
It's hard to say a guy who might be a guard as a value pick, but based on where you see him ranked by public big boards, this is a pretty good value, it seems like.
I think Fautano is super similar to Elijah Vera Tucker. Frankly, if I had the Jets, I think that that's a guy with the Jets, but it's similar. He could be a guard, he could be a tackle, but he's the type of solid where it's a where he'll play, not if.
Fair enough. All right, so Rams are up. Obviously, defensive tackle is a position that comes to mind after Aaron Donald's retirement, but Byron Murphy is gone. Feels like edge rusher then could be a way to go. And, there's a couple guys here, Jared Verse from Florida still on the board, but so is Latu out of UCLA. I think it's just probably going to come down to the medical. If the Rams are like, yeah, we're good with his situations, then, his abilities are pretty special. So I'm going to go with Latu out of UCLA here at 19 for the Rams, and they'll figure out if they need defensive tackle somewhere else in the draft. Evan, Steelers at number 20.
Yeah, you guys took, a couple guys that I was maybe targeting for the Steelers right ahead of me. I think I'm going to go BPA here. And I think that is Terrion Arnold. Now, Joey Porter was awesome as a rookie, as the Steelers' number one cornerback as a rookie. And they signed or they traded for Dante Jackson. But Dante Jackson has been extremely inconsistent throughout his career in Carolina. And I think that Terrion Arnold, he will tackle. And I think that will appeal to Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin's background is coaching DBs. And Terry Arnold, he only ran 4.51 at the combine, but man, his tape is really good and he will tackle. He's physical and he's big. And that kind of suits, you know, I don't know, Joey Porter and Terry Arnold as a duo in the back end with Minkah Fitzpatrick and Dante Jackson as the number three. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to go there. Terry Arnold to the Steelers at number 20.
I like it. I like the BPA. And also, yeah, I mean, they can use a corner as well. And this is the thing with the draft. You know, you can have all the plans you want, but then all of a sudden the board changes and you've got to make decisions, including, hey, we have needs, but sometimes you got to take the better player. And that's probably a good call here. All right, Danny, number 21, the Dolphins. Obviously, they lost some pieces on both sides of the ball this year on the offensive line and the defensive line. Christian Wilkins gone. You could go either one of those areas or anywhere else on the board your heart desires. What are you thinking here for 21?
This is a really interesting board for Miami because I'm a big Cooper DeJean fan at Iowa, and I usually have him off the board at this point. And it's funny because I'm thinking, you know, Miami lost Christian Wilkins in free agency to the Raiders, and, you know, this could be a place for Jerzon Newton out of Illinois, a defensive tackle, which, I mean, I look at Miami, frankly, like they're living the Miami lifestyle. You know, a lot of, you know, fast, but, you know, they, you know, a lot of speed. Like, they kind of need some protein. They kind of need some beef. You know, it's kind of, they may haven't eaten in a few days. They've been partying too hard. It's like they need a burrito. And, like, this is a team. They actually extended Austin Jackson at tackle. They have Terron Arnold. They have, Armstead. But so part of me wants to give them like an offensive lineman. Part of me wants to give them a defensive lineman like Jerzon Newton. And it's, but I'm staring at Cooper DeJean here. And the Miami also has been kind of shedding cornerbacks because they, you know, they have some older guys, but they added some wily veterans. So I'm going to give them Newton. I'm torn. I'm going to give him Jerzon Newton because I think they need some beef. But you know what? No, actually, I'm changing my mind. I'm giving DeJean because, as I said, I'm like, DeJean, I think, is just the best player on the board. I think Cooper DeJean, frankly, is like Jalen Ramsey, smaller. He's not quite as fast, but I think that he's versatile. So I'm sorry if I screwed up your picks. But DeJean, I don't think, should fall to the Eagles at 22. He's just too good.
I had to redo my copy-paste because he, how dare you. Sorry. Yeah, and I told you guys, I don't know if it was on the pod or off air, but like I did six versions of a Commanders draft, and one time I traded up, I jumped ahead of Philly at 22 and took DeJean. He's a playmaker. He's also can help you on special teams in significant ways. So, I like him as a player as well. So I think it's from a talent perspective, I think that's pretty good. As far as I am concerned, the Eagles are not going to be happy, though. They're picking now at 22. They're not thrilled with that. I've seen some talk that, like, maybe it makes sense they take an offensive tackle here because Lane Johnson is obviously getting up there. And now that you just did what you did, Nate Wiggins is also on the board here from Clemson if I wanted to stay in the secondary. And you know what? In fact, that's what I'm going to do. I feel like the Eagles secondary last year really kind of fell off, gives them a chance here to get some younger talent there. I kind of have a feeling Wiggins may ultimately slip a little bit in the first round, but I think for this, I'll go Nate Wiggins, cornerback, Philadelphia at 22. That puts Evan back on the board. The Vikings are up again. They took McCarthy at 11, so we'll assume they're not going quarterback here, but Evan, what are you thinking here for the Vikings?
Yeah, so we came away with J.J. McCarthy at number 11. And now the Vikings, you know, I think the Vikings have a chance to have a decent offensive line, but we need one upgrade. We've got Christian Darrisaw at left tackle. We've got Blake Brandel at left guard right now. Not loving that. Garrett Bradbury, former first-round pick, a little bit of a disappointment at center, but we can live with him. Ed Ingram, third-year, second-round pick at right guard. Brian O'Neill, who's a stud at right tackle. We're going to address the offensive line here, and we're going to go with Graham Barton out of Duke. Had a sensational pro day, really smart kid. Obviously, you know, when he got into Duke, and we're going to plug and play him right at left guard, right next to Christian Darrisaw for the next 10 years.
He is considered to be like the most versatile offensive lineman. He's been, you know, even viewed as the best center now for a lot of teams. So Graham Barton to the Vikings, way to, you know, protect that young quarterback you just drafted, makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know if what the Dallas Cowboys have done this offseason makes a lot of sense to people, but here they are at number 24. They've had a pretty quiet offseason other than just people always talk about Dallas. Danny, where are you thinking here for the Cowboys at 24?
I think Dallas takes Amarius Mims, the tackle out of Georgia. You know, Dallas lost Tyron Smith, the left tackle, who's been there forever. I mean, Dan Quinn took half their defensive line rotation to Washington with him. They took the center with him. Dallas, I mean, you look at you think of Dallas as this incredible offensive line team. Dallas is basically projected to have the center and right guard to be like just two career backups, basically special teams guys. They have Tyler Smith. And Dallas really, you know, Amarius Mims is incredibly raw. He's huge. He's like Groot, but he also just has played, what, 8 games in college? So Dallas is the team. And honestly, ironically, the Packers, who also cut ties with David Bakhtiari, these are the two teams I think take bets on really big, raw players. Like the Cowboys, Tyler Smith was considered a project a couple years ago. He's been a great left guard. Dallas has the patience to stick with guys. Terrence Steele had a very tough beginning to his career. Now he's formed into a really good right tackle. I think that Amarius Mims is a project, but Cowboys hat Jerry Jones and them, they have the patience to stick with those guys. And I think that they see him as a Tyron Smith replacement.
Yeah, I think everything you kind of just said there makes a good amount of sense to me. All right, so Green Bay is now on the clock at 25. That's, you know, defensive tackle would be a consideration, but two guys are already off the board. Linebacker, I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody here that I'm dying to get. Offensive tackle is another need, but you just took one. Now, there is still Tyler Guyton on the board from Oklahoma. He is certainly a big guy, as you were pointing out. So without trying to delay this too much, let me go there. I'll go Tyler Guyton. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, if he can be a Bakhtiari replacement if they think he's good enough for left tackle right now. But I'll go Guyton, give the Packers some more beef up front at number 25.
All right, number 26, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We go a lot of ways. I think there's a bunch of holes in the Buccaneers roster. However, best player available, I think, here is Jared Verse, outside pass rusher, Florida State, local kid. Joe Tryon hasn't been that great. Yaya Diaby was pretty good as a third-round rookie. They did sign Randy Gregory, but he's not been a reliable player throughout his career. I think we add another pass rusher, Jared Verse, out of Florida State. Maybe the best pure pass rusher in the draft, really. So I think we're getting a steal here at 26.
The variance on him is pretty fascinating. Like, there was, you know, he was getting talked about up there at that number 9 pick for a while. Now, maybe this is too low, but it does feel like he maybe have dropped a bit, and maybe it's completely wrong. Cause like you said, his pass rushing skills are definitely impressive for sure. Yeah.
27 and a half sacks over his final two college seasons.
All right. 27. Danny, you're back up with the Cardinals. Hold on, Danny. I'm getting here. Hey, look, I forgot. I have a prop here, actually. Look, the phone's ringing, Danny. This is an old – you may not have seen one of these. This is a real phone from back in the day. You pick it up, all that.
It's good landline. Thing
yeah, landline. It's good thing you have two of these phones, though, because two teams are calling you right now. Your New York Giants are calling. They're interested in Bo Nix. They're like, hey, you know what? Sure, we already got the receiver. We can at least now think about getting a replacement. They've got a second and a third round pick this year to consider for you. The Denver Broncos are also calling. Now, they don't have a second round pick, but they do have a first round pick next year. And, you know, how much longer is Sean Payton waiting to get a quarterback? So basically a first, and we'll say Denver throws in like a third this year as well, but you have to wait for the first next year. Where are you at? The Cardinals made their pick at 4, but this is their second first round pick. What are you thinking here for the Cardinals at 27?
Well, when you say all that, as a Giants fan, I think about if the Giants need to call one of those 1-800 help numbers because they're addicted to just mid quarterbacks who just have the cut of the jib to like marry your daughter or something. I don't know. It's that seems awful. As a Cardinals GM, if I'm Monty Austin for it, just give me Sean Payton's number. Give me what? Yeah, You give me a next couple first for the Broncos? Moving up? Sure.
Well, they'll do the first next year.
Done. How quickly can you be here? Sold.
Yeah, sold. Done. All right. So the
Payton gets robbed again.
I mean, is that in? I mean, Bo Nix is kind of all over the place. Some people think he's reasonable. Other people are just.
I think that the gap in the evaluation is because it's not. I don't actually think anyone really disagrees on what Bo Nix is. It's people disagree on how much it's worth. Bo Nix is considered a high floor, low ceiling quarterback. Bo Nix, most experienced college quarterback ever coming in. Honestly, if you told me that a rookie quarterback, other than Caleb Williams, threw for like 3 touchdowns and 200 yards in his week one, it might be Bo Nix, just because Bo Nix has the experience that they can come in and run an offense. But I just don't think he has any of the tools to necessarily be some great quarterback. Now, I think what Sean Payton might see is a guy who can just come in and do whatever he says and he trusts to execute exactly his vision. But I do not see Bo Nix as special in any way. I call him Boomer Bo because, you know, he's freaking 24 years old. He's been in college since 2019.
I think he's actually 36, but
yes. he fought in Vietnam too.
Is that right? And the Korean?
Yeah, no, it's the silent war.
I do think Sean Payton got enough arrogance / confidence in himself to think, if I can do this, just give me the guy, just the way sort of Kyle Shanahan 100%. Has pulled it off here with Brock Purdy. So that's why I think it's at least something to consider. All right, so the Broncos trade to 27, take Bo Nix. That leaves the Bills at 28. For me, you know, obviously they traded away Stephon Diggs. It's put receiver on the map. Maybe they even decide to trade up for one of these guys, but they're in a position where A.D. Mitchell from Texas is still here. From a athletic physical standpoint, he seems like a pretty good option for the Bills. So give me Mitchell out of Texas at 28 for the Bills. Evan, you're up at the 29 with the Lions.
Yeah. Ooh, we got an interesting situation because we have a bunch of players that I like right
here. Is Jason Newton still on the board or Latu?
I've heard that Newton is not going to go in the first round because he didn't work out at his pro day.
Yeah.
But I know that he is. I mean, now he's in the mix here. I think he's in the mix here. I mean, this is late first round. They did sign DJ Reader. They have Aleem McNeil. They signed Alualu, Onzurike. Levi is all right. Man, they have a lot of options here. I think I'm going to go with Kool-Aid McKinstry though. Kool-Aid McKinstry, big, you know, physical press corner. They did trade for Carlton Davis. I don't think he's enough. Amik Robertson is their projected other starting out perimeter cornerback, and I'd rather have him as my, you know, my third option. Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama. His stock has seemed to dip a little bit since the beginning of the 2023 season. Maybe because Terrion Arnold outplayed him a little bit, you know, on the opposite side at Alabama. But I think he's a rock solid pick here. I think he's a day one starter here. Brian Branch is your nickel corner. Kool-Aid McKinstry opposite Carlton Davis, and I think we're cooking for a team that really has struggled in pass defense consistently under Aaron Glenn.
Well, what I'm hearing is you're saying teams are just not, when it comes to McKinstry, they're just not drinking enough Kool-Aid at this point. They're not buying it.
That was just too easy.
Look, this is what I do here. You know, I take the, unlike Drake May, I take the layups. Just kidding.
Bo Nix of podcasting.
Hey, I've been called a lot worse. All right, Danny's up at 30. Just for as a reminder for you two, Evan, you can pick at 31, and Danny back to 32. I'll take myself off the board so you guys can share.
Passing the buck again.
That's what I do. All right, so Danny, you're up at 30. The Ravens obviously lost a ton of players in free agency, which means they could go in a bunch of different directions. Where do you think here for the Raiders at 30?
Where's that landline? Where'd that go? Ring, ring. Where's that little corded phone?
Hello, because, hello.
If I'm the Ravens, I'm looking at this like, you know, we're at the point where some of the best players on the board are receivers. The Ravens just had Rashad Bateman. you know, they just invested in Zay Flowers last year. They have Mark Andrews. They have Isaiah Likely. I'm like, do they need more receivers? They need an offensive line. But, oh, my God, how many tackles just went off the board? They could take the ninth line offensive lineman off the board. You know, are they going to, you know, they could use edge rushers, but the way the defense is, it's not necessarily a priority. I'm looking at Chop Robinson, and I'm like, you know what? If I'm Baltimore, I am calling the Raiders, and I'm saying, would you like to come back up and get Michael Penix Jr.?
No, he's gone.
Oh, yeah, right. The Raiders already took him.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Six quarterbacks. The Raiders
could take Michael Penix and Bo Nix.
they could trade up and draft him again.
Oh, yeah. So I guess that's been my – all right. Well, in that case, I'm gonna take Chop Robinson then. And I think that might be a stretch. I don't know how to feel about Chop Robinson, but I think he's the kind of guy that if he's there, the Ravens take good players, and just the Ravens just getting a guy that with just the Robinson's athleticism at the 30th pick. I think frankly the Ravens usually pick too late to get a guy like this, honestly. And I think they'll just be like, whoa, we don't get to do that. It's like, you know, it's like the guys in Ferris Bueller driving the car, the valet's taking it for a spin. They're like, oh my God, we're getting like an edge with this much physical talent. So I think that would work well, especially since the Ravens, they don't have Jadeveon Clowney anymore.
Ferris Bueller, great movie, by the way. shot partly at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Chicago.
Maybe the ultimate Chicago movie, if it's not another The Fugitive.
Pro Cubs, anti-Bears part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
There you go. All right, Evan, so I'll put you back on the clock. The 49ers at 31, you know, I don't know if this piece gets them over the top if they meet the Chiefs again next year, but, you know, they've got some choices to make. There's also the Brandon Ayuk potential contract scenario. Maybe that factors into your thinking here. What are you thinking for the 49ers at 31?
I think from a need standpoint right here, they should take Jackson Powers Johnson. Their offensive line talent is mediocre at best. I mean, their projectors are John Feliciano, Jake Brendel at center and right guard. But there have been some medical concerns on Jackson Power Johnson. So I think that they're going to get a little bit nuts here. And they're going to take Xavier Worthy out of Texas. There have been I think that these like Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, maybe even Sean McVay, sort of, you know, that lineage – are going to be extremely intrigued by Xavier Worthy because he's so good with the ball in his hands. You look at him as a freaking punt returner. He averaged over 14 yards per punt return in college. He was insane after the catch. Now you got to manufacture him touches. I mean, he's not going to go out there and be like, you know, a pro ready route runner right away. They also have the issue with Brandon Ayuk. So I think that Xavier Worthy, and we released a bet for the Dolphins to take Xavier Worthy at 21. He would be such an awesome fit there. They need another weapon. I mean, Waddle gets hurt a lot. Tyreek is small, getting a little older, almost 30 years old. They need. I think that Xavier Worthy could go 21 to the Dolphins. I think he can go 24 to the Cowboys. But here, he falls to 31. The 49ers need an offensive lineman. Fuck it. We're taking Xavier Worthy.
Wow. A pick worthy of an F-bomb. Nice. I like it. All right. I don't know what that does for you, Danny Pickett, for the Chiefs, because, you know, you can make the case that Kansas City could use a receiver. There's other guys on the board, but they also maybe want a cornerback after trading away L'Jarius Sneed. What are you thinking here for the last pick of the first round?
So you're right. And Chiefs fans are probably banging down the door right now to go and take a receiver right now. And I'm not going to lie, I'm looking at Ladd McConkey out of Georgia and just thinking about Ladd McConkey. Just seems boring to be catching touchdowns from Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. But I'm going to do something that'll upset everybody. I mean, just like super boring. And I'm going to take Kingsley Suamataya out of BYU because two things. One, everything the Chiefs have done in the last 2 years has suggested they don't actually need to invest in receiver at all. They traded Tyreek Hill away and won two Super Bowls back to back. And they then got Marquise Brown in free agency for like $7 million. This is not a team to me that is screaming, we need to invest in receiver. This is a team that's invested in defense, and they have won two Super Bowls with shoestring and bubblegum at left tackle. I don't really know how they've done it, but like they have right now Wanya Morris at left tackle. He's a third rounder a couple years ago. Like I don't think they're going to continue to just ham and egg it at left and right tackle. The Bucs Chiefs Super Bowl, they got blown out of the water by the Bucs D-line. They went and invested in protecting Patrick Mahomes. that's the only thing that matters. It's like you will never regret getting a left tackle to protect Patrick Mahomes left, right, wherever you got to, wherever he ends up in the NFL. That to me is the kind of investment that you will pay dividends for a decade if it goes right. So I think the Chiefs go lineman.
To complement that take, I've actually heard independently that the Chiefs are high on that individual player, Kingsley. I have no idea how to say his last name, but and that he is a player that is very underrated by the media and that teams like more. So I really like that pick. Actually, I have him penciled in my upcoming mock draft as the 32nd overall pick to the Chiefs. So I love that one.
Yeah, I mean, at a minimum, I 1,000% agree on the receiver bit. I always think people overestimate the value of receivers in general. But when you have Mahomes, and this is the same thing the Bills are about to go through with Josh Allen, you don't need to make massive investments. Your investment is the quarterback who will raise everybody up. You can get that guy later. My only wonder would be if the Rashee Rice thing kind of goes further sideways here in terms of his availability, maybe they have to make a sooner investment. But otherwise, I agree with you 1,000% on the tackle. Look at that. First round is done. You guys are great. I'm going to let you get back to your real lives. Any final comments from either of you, whether about this or give us, you know, one big prediction, because you didn't get to pick everybody here. Give us like one big prediction before you go, or just, you know, thoughts on what we just did.
I actually don't. We did not have Tyler Guyton going in the first round, though.
We did. He went 25 to the Packers.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Then I don't have anybody.
Yeah. Jordan Morgan, Johnny Newton.
Yeah. I don't have anybody that stands out that we missed or anything like that. So I think this is actually a really reasonable mock draft. And, it would be fun would be to record this, put this in the tournament, the Hutter report, and see how it does against the other ones. I think this is like it makes a lot of sense.
It does. You think that Evan they give us if we did this and it won? You think they give us a third?
yeah, maybe.
Danny, how about you?
No, this was a lot of fun. I mean, I think that this is a really good exercise. I think so much of the draft hinges on what happens with that JJ, whether the Vikings stand pat at 11, do they move up to the Cardinals at 4, the Chargers at 5, the Giants at 6, the Falcons at 8, and where that does, I think, throws so many wrenches into everything, obviously. But I think my hot take is this is an incredible draft. I think that every year it's like we're a little high on optimism and it's most of these guys fail. I think that I'm like weirdly optimistic about a lot of these players. Maybe that's because I'm an idiot, but I actually think that there's a chance you go back and scroll through this draft later and you scroll through the 2021 draft. You're like, oh my God, look at these guys. You scroll through 2014. And I'm like, I think there are some guys like this. We're talking about Leatu Latu going to be like the 19th pick to the Rams. And I'm like, that guy could be leading the league at sacks in 3 years. He's the 19th pick in the draft. I think it's going to be a really cool group of people.
Yeah. Well, look, I think you guys are a very cool group of people. I really appreciate you doing this for me. This is now another favor I owe Danny and Evan. I will make up the favor with you because I'm going to be going in your podcast next week to do a similar exercise as well. I look forward to doing that on Establish the Run. Danny, of course, at The Ringer.
The Ringer NFL Draft Show, which we also call the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. It's complicated. Hopefully you search either on Spotify, it'll come up. And also we have NFLDraft.3.com where we have our big board. We have I have mock draft, Danny Kelly's mock draft, Ben Solak charted every quarterback passes the whole year at NFLDraft.3.com. We have big boards and everything, top 100 from Danny Kelly. So just company man for The Ringer.
And Evan, what do we need to know about what you guys have offering up between that now and the draft?
Oh, I don't know. Just keep a lookout for my final couple mock drafts and, the audio mock draft that you and I will be doing with Scott Smith and Adam Levitan. That's always a really fun show.
Absolutely. All right. I appreciate the insight, guys. So does the audience. I'm speaking on their behalf. We'll look forward to reading your stuff as we go here. And 6 quarterbacks. I don't know. We'll see if that happens in the first round. All right, guys. Thanks.
Well, before we go, can we break down the Cubs' entire roster? Is that the next hour of the show?
You want to talk about Miles Mastroboni right now?
Because I'm going to ask you about Ben Brown, dude.
Oh, stud.
Ben Brown's looking good, man. Also, Christopher Morel.
Oh, that's my favorite player and my daughter's favorite player. So,
he's the man.
I only know about how the Orioles are, and the Orioles have the most amazing roster around. So,
well, you know, it's going to be Cubs beating the Orioles in the World Series. I already bet on that at 130-1. So, wow. I'll see you there. I'll see you at Camden. All right.
I hope you can get some money back, even though for having the right teams in the World Series, even if you lose, because that's how that's going. All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Big thanks to Evan Silva and Danny Heifetz for their time. That was enjoyable. You know, you never know how these things will go. You know, maybe we should track this one to see how close we get it. But it was always it was good catching up with those guys to talk about this draft. And again, thanks so much to everybody who came out to the live talk session on The Athletic. We'll get to one of those soon, hopefully sooner than later. But that is it for now. Again, go make sure to check out some of the podcasts if you've missed any in recent days, and check out my work on The Athletic. But that's it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time, see ya.